Okay, we're going to get started. Chuck, just chime in if you can't hear or we're talking over one another. And you can text me or Cheryl if you have a question, if you feel like you can't get in. But we're going to get going here. So a reminder to the public that this meeting is being recorded. And it's the annual meeting of the Highlight Fire Department. So we're going to go through sort of the State of the Union presentation. And before we get to the consent agenda, I just thought we would introduce both staff and trustees who are here. And we'll start with Chief Ravisky to my right.
I'm Jason Ravisky, Fire Chief of the Highlight Rural Fire District.
Jason Jarrett, Trustee.
Pete Geddes, Chair.
Nick Schreiber, Secretary.
Cheryl Wyman, Administrative Assistant.
Brian Nicolai, Assistant Fire Chief.
Is there any public comment on items not on the agenda? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve, though? Or is there anything any trustee would like pulled from the consent agenda? If not, can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, moving into the regular agenda, we just introduced everybody. Recent news stories. Brian, we're going to toss that one over to you.
So I believe depending on what we're defining as recent, the last published news story we had was of our community parade that we performed back in the beginning of April. The way that came about is we didn't necessarily reach out to the media about it. We advertised it on our Facebook page, reached out to some HOAs and some media stations follow us on our Facebook page, so they caught wind of it through that. They came out before the parade and I did a short interview with them, and that made it on their broadcast. So the way that one started out was through our Facebook page, through an event that we created, which isn't necessarily the case for all of our news broadcasts that get made. So at times, if we know we're going to have an interesting training or we want to thank an organization that's helping us with the training, we will reach out to news agencies to see if they want to do a story on it. But that, I believe, is really the most recent one and the last one we've had in the last couple of months.
It looked like it got lots of positive feedback.
Yeah.
As I saw.
It was very well received through. I always started the parade at, I don't even remember, 12 or 1. And we finished at 4:30 p.m. and had a very good turnout of people in the neighborhoods come up and see us. And it seemed like everybody enjoyed it.
Great. Any board questions about news stories? Hello, Justin.
Sorry, guys.
No worries.
It's not gonna work.
Well, as is our sort of custom here with the annual meeting, I'm going to give just a brief State of the Union and then open the floor for other board members to opine on things. And the purpose of this part of the meeting is to just let the public know what we're thinking about, what the challenges are as we see them facing the department. Give everybody just sort of an overview of our priorities, where we think things are going well, and perhaps where we think we can improve things. And so I'm just going to start. I'll just let the public know that we all should be very pleased and proud of the way that this department is operating. All of us on this board have been around. I was reading everybody's bios before I came to the meeting, have been around this for a long, long time. And You know, Nick, when you think back on where this little department started back in the 1970s and the work we had to go through to get the two departments merged together, I just think our taxpayers ought to be pleased, really pleased, with the progress that we've made as an entity. We are in an excellent financial condition, and I measure that as specifically pointing to the capital reserve funds that we've created. It was a real struggle to get those funds to the state that they're in today, which is good. It could be better, but it's definitely good. And the reason that I am so adamant about maintaining those funds is because it relieves our taxpayers of having to face mill levy increases for sort of operational, normal operating equipment budgets. Certainly there are going to be times I would expect, especially if we, as we've been talking about, think about another station where a mill levy might have to be run, but it used to be that we had to really raise taxes just to equip our troops in proper gear. And we've come a long way since then. So I think that is a testament to this board's prudent fiscal management and desire to keep the tax burden as low as we possibly can on the taxpayers. I think we're incredibly fortunate to have the volunteers that we do and the reservoir of goodwill that Brian and Jason have created at Montana State University that allows us to continually to successfully recruit and then also retain a cohort of people who are past our college years, I think is a testament to their effectiveness in creating a culture that people want to be around and want to join. So I'm very pleased with that. And with that, I'll just work around the room recognizing other trustees, starting from my left. So Justin, if you've got anything you'd like to say, now is the time.
I'm just happy to be here and happy to see the department doing so well, and I don't really have a lot to say.
Trustee Sharp.
Thank you. I'm very pleased with the level of training, the quality of our volunteers and our staff. I think there are improvements that can be made in terms of reaching out to the public, but we're making progress. I appreciate all the progress we have made in terms of reaching out and dealing with issues. There are going to be lots of issues as time goes on, given the amount of taxes that are piled on with all our schools and everything else. I think it's going to be very challenging for us as a board to take care of our monies and to be able to keep our firemen safe with the proper equipment, as well as to meet the other needs that we have in terms of organization. It's our fourth anniversary of Highlight Rural Fire District, and I think it's we've come a long way in 4 years, and I think we can also look forward to much more to be accomplished, and hopefully we weather this COVID thing really well and come out better for it. And I think we're in a very good place. Thank you.
Jason Jarrett, I think that we're doing pretty well. Watching this go from the late 70s, early 80s to now, it's on a positive trajectory. I think we're headed into some uncertain times with uncertain data. If we were confused about the lack of data on the virus, I think you have to be just as confused about the lack of data on what the economy is going to be doing and what our growth rate. I'm optimistic that this community will be somewhat insulated, but I'm a little bit pessimistic and a little cautious about our financial future and what that's going to look like for a little bit. But otherwise, keep going.
Is there any public comment on the sort of state of the union? Chuck?
You know, I can chime in, but I think from my perspective as a citizen and resident taxpayer of Highlight, I just find that the most important thing is that the reserves are added to every year. I agree 100% with trying not to add taxes. I think Highlight, and because Sourdough was a tax-type district also previously, handled that very well and worked very hard not to, to increase taxes. So I applaud the board for spending money on things that improve operations, for saving money so that we can replace trucks and other apparatus without having to come to the taxpayers and ask for more money, because as we all know, the go-to answer many times is to ask for more money. And so I applaud the board for being very cognizant and diligent in fiduciary responsibility. After all, that is what the board is there for. So thank you for your efforts and contributions on that level.
Is there any more public comment? Okay, review of bylaws. Now, the way that we do policy review is that Nick and I form the policy subcommittee of the board, and as I wrote to board members ahead of this meeting, the place to work out changes to any particular policy is in that subcommittee, so we don't spend all night long here trying to wordsmith and edit, and then bring back draft proposals for the entire board to discuss back to the subcommittee if we need more tuning up, and then back for final approval. So I hope you all have had a chance to look at the bylaws, and if there are any changes you would like to see made, why don't you send them to Nick and I, and we will take them up when we meet again. Is there any board discussion about bylaws or any concerns that jumped out? Anything you wanted to comment on, board members?
My only comment is that reviewing policies for boards for years, I'm very happy with these. It's a good set of policies, and it's well-written stuff. There's no major easy changes. There's some things that might make life a little simpler later, but it's actually in pretty good shape. Well done to you, all of those that did it before. It's a big deal.
Any public comment on the bylaws? Any more board discussion on bylaws? Okay. Review of the fire chief and the assistant fire chief job description. Same comments apply. Any board discussion about those? Any?
Do you want to hold this then until it comes back, or?
No, if there's no suggested changes to these job descriptions, we'll sign these tonight. Any public comment on the fire chief and assistant fire chief job descriptions? Okay, can I have a motion to approve these job descriptions so we can get them into our policy file?
Moved.
Second, please.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Preliminary budget. Walt is not here, but he sent us some notes.
Let's go back to Cheryl.
And again, this is not the final bite at the budget apple that we get. We've approved it, we'll approve it officially in August, but this has to go into the county. So, is there any board discussion on the budget that is presented? Is there any public comment on the budget? Take as much time for board members as they need to move through it. Any comment from the chief on the budget?
No, sir.
So,
Trustee Schrager.
Just so I'm clear on the attachment D, the draft, the numbers in red are the amounts of dollars that we're going to carry forward into the reserve for the next out of this past budget that we'll carry into the reserve. Is that true? $367,684. Is that my understanding what that is?
Chief, you got up.
So is this attachment D is in Delta?
Yep.
Attachment, yep.
Okay, and where what
very,
number
very
is
last it? Page just before the chief report.
Yep. Yeah, which the, number?
The total expense operations, the number in red, 367,684 is
that one. Is correct.
And we can decide whether to allocate those funds between the three accounts that we have or put them into one or whatever. We won't do that at this meeting.
Right. Yeah, there are, three, what do you call them, reserve accounts or mm-hmm. one for buildings, one for equipment, one for
maintenance.
Maintenance, yeah.
Everybody good? Jason, you got a furrow brow over there? You good?
I haven't seen I just want to make sure. But Nick, that is only as of the end of February.
So that's not
for our current budget. Yeah, so that could change by the time we reach July 1st.
Right.
That's just currently right now. That's the unused portion of what we budgeted.
Right.
So that's more of an indication of how our spending has been so far.
But it's likely the number is going to be in that range somewhere, plus or minus.
Potentially, but no, because I can't say that. Yeah, I don't know how that number is going to react between now and July 1st. That'd be a better question for Walt.
I guarantee it's going to go down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not sure how much.
Okay, is there any public comment on the budget?
Yeah, I had one.
Could you come on up and just tell us who you are?
Michael Buffington, volunteer. Just curious, on the expenditure sheet, what falls under the professional services category?
So is this for the county form?
Yes.
So I believe, and I can't remember how Walt lumps that, but what typically that is what we pay our, accounting and bookkeeping fees, any legal fees. I can't remember if,
gotcha.
What else falls. But so the problem, Michael, is that these are forms that the county gives us.
Mm, gotcha.
We don't make up this form. So what we have to do is take this budget, which is our budget, and we have to squeeze it almost artificially into these categories of the county.
Okay, cool.
And so the much better budget to look at is our fully expanded budget. Yeah.
I see that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other public comment on the budget? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the preliminary budget as presented?
So moved.
Second?
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Brian, you want to do this?
Yeah.
SCBAs?
So for the SCBA agenda topic, you have a spreadsheet that I handed out in front of you. Give you a little bit of background. So our current SCBAs, which are self-contained breathing apparatus, are breathing devices for fires, are a little different in their age. A majority of them are at 10 years old. We do have some that are almost 22 years old now. Coming to the end of their serviceable life, and are just requiring more maintenance, and which then in turn costs us more money to fix, and an even bigger deal for us is a significant amount of time there of the service. So Jason and I have been working on a proposal to replace our SCBAs with new ones, and we have gotten two quotes. So the two kind of different quotes, one was from Big Sky Fire Equipment out of Lewistown, Montana, who supplies MSA, is the brand that they supply. And the other was MES Fire Equipment out of Denver, Colorado, and they provide Scott. So if you look at, as far as the quantities go, we're not increasing the number of SCBAs we currently have. It's just replacing all of our current SCBAs. And the different kind of line items, it's a little confusing MSA to Scott, because the way they proposed this to us, if you look on the item line under MSA, it includes the SCBA itself, one bottle, one battery pack, and one face mask. And then if you compare that to Scott, it's the SCBA itself with the buddy breather set up into it already. So the numbers on the quantities don't exactly match up between the bids, but the equipment itself is the same number. So you can see in the yellow the two total numbers for the cost of replacement, both from MSA and from Scott. Through our kind of research we have done and demoing, we've demoed, so our current SCBAs are all Scott brand SCBAs, and talking with the manufacturer and sales rep of Scott, they really haven't changed much in technology, that they've pretty well stayed the same. So we had a good idea of what they were currently offering. We did approximately a 60 to 90 day test with MSA SCBAs, test them in both live fire and non-live fire scenarios, to get a good feel of kind of how they operated comparable to Scott. And kind of our end determination was we'd like to go with the MSA quote. And there's a couple reasons that we are leaning more towards that. And this Big Sky Fire Equipment did come in with a better number than MES Fire Equipment for Scott did. But there are some advantages with going with MSA that we see. Currently, the maintenance for the Scott SCBAs has to be done in Denver. So we have to ship any SCBA requiring repair to Denver. They repair it and then ship it back to us. On average, that takes any SCBA out of service from, depending on the repair, it means 1 to 3 months. Big Sky Fire Equipment services MSA, SCBAs, and from what they can tell us, they have a service tech that travels the state, and they would be, you know, within a week to get on, to get to our facility, so we wouldn't have to ship them out to do the repair all in-house, unless it was a significant issue that needed to go all the way back to the MSA manufacturer, any service they would be able to do on site. So that's a big one, and that was really one of our main deciding factors. As far as the performance of the SCBA's comparable, we thought they were pretty equal as far as their durability, their functionality, and we had several volunteers test them in our testing period and kind of give us our feedback on them. But the biggest one was the service, not having to ship SCBAs to Denver to get fixed, and the amount of time that takes to get the SCBAs back into service. Another pretty significant advantage, especially with the current COVID pandemic going on, is there's very little cross-contamination of germs with MSA SCBAs, and reason for that is there's just different systems. So Scott, as SCBA, the secondary regulator that plugs into our mask, all the inhalation and exhalation is done through that secondary regulator. With MSA, the secondary regulator that plugs into the mask, only the inhalation goes through that secondary regulator. The exhalation goes out the mask. So if you look at both bids, we issue a mask, no matter if it's MSA or Scott, to each firefighter has their own mask, which they are responsible for keeping clean. And then on top of that, with Scott, we would issue everybody their own secondary regulator. Since with MSA, we don't have to worry about the cross-contamination of the secondary regulator, we wouldn't have to issue each firefighter secondary regulator with MSA. So again, another advantage of going with that system. But all the equipment, I guess the one addition we did add on there, it's something we've been talking about for several years that we should be carrying, is the RIT or the RIT systems for each manufacturer, which means RIT stands for Rapid Intervention Team. Currently we don't carry any type of SCBA RIT system. And that would be used for a downed firefighter or a firefighter running out of air in a building or who was injured, who needed assistance going in. The RIT system goes in, plugs into their SCBA, and basically recharges it with additional air to get them then out of the building. That is one addition we did add on with this bid proposal, just because it's something that we should really be carrying that we just haven't for several years or for up to this point. So that's kind of a proposal, unless Jason has something else.
Board discussion. Questions?
Anybody that would benefit from our little setup?
We haven't really talked about how we're going to...
Yeah, given their age, we would likely offer to give them to any small department in Montana that just didn't have anything or just was short of equipment.
What do most of the other departments have? Like whether or not you had to borrow someone's bottle on a big fire or anything?
Oh, in our county?
Yeah.
It's a pretty good mix of MSA and Scott. And so the board understands too, there's only two manufacturers here that are represented in these, and they really are the only two to consider. Every other company out there is, you know, really a lot lower in quality. And I would say that 90% of the American Fire Service uses these two companies. They really are the only two. Survive Air was a big company for years. They went under. They don't exist anymore. These are the two most reputable brands. And I don't know that anybody in our county has anything other than these two brands.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, in the state, I'm not even sure. But I know in our county, everybody either has MSA or Scott. So it's pretty 50-50. Bozeman Fire just went to Scott's. Central Valley has always used MSAs. Fire School uses MSA.
Fort Ellis has MSA. Gateway has Scott. Big Sky has Scott. It's a good mix.
It's the one or the other. Yeah.
Brian, are we anywhere close to the technological breakthrough to get out of this 1970s technology? Is anybody, are we getting close to that at all?
Depending on the technology you're referring to, they're making some advance. There are options that we're not going with, like Bluetooth radio connections. Jason and I looked at them, and you need an engineering degree just to turn the pack on and marry it to a radio.
There's no rebreathing technology.
Oh yeah, for
seriously that, yeah. To get rid of the bottle and to lighten it up. There's really nothing out there.
Are there communications integrated into the mask system?
Well, that's what Brian was talking about. They do have a system that will Bluetooth connect, but it is whiz bang and cool as it looked. It was a crazy. We watch YouTube videos on how to do it, and you have to go through the menu of the pack, and then you have to go through the menu of the radio. EF Johnson products won't work with it, only Motorola products. And it is not pretty at all. And it's expensive.
Get that. So it's literally, you got to take your mask off if you want to get on a comms call.
No. One advantage I missed with the MSAs. Both manufacturers have voice data diaphragms in the mask. So Scott just comes out the side, and there's two diaphragms that you can hear people talk. MSA, and this actually was a benefit that the volunteers liked, comes standard with a voice amplifying system. So it actually comes through a wired speaker and amplifies their voice. Scott does offer that also as an add-on, but it comes standard with MSA.
Yeah. So you can just hold the radio by that. And it's very audible.
Let's get some, ask for some public comment, and we can have more discussion. Is there any public comment on the discussion so far? More board discussion, questions for the staff.
So charging the battery packs compared to replacing the battery every 6 months or a year or whatever with the other ones?
Yeah, so our if you look at MSA, and Scott just offers alkaline batteries. They don't have a rechargeable system in there. Product. MSA does offer a rechargeable battery pack and a alkaline battery pack. In kind of the discussions we've had about looking at the battery life with both rechargeable and alkaline, at most it would, from what the MSA data we can get, is we would have to maybe change the batteries twice a year in the packs.
With how much we train?
Right. And if you compare that to Scott, we're replacing them once a year. And the difference is, and that's our current product. Yeah. I don't know, the new Scott pack would probably be a twice a year switch out also, just because they've added more electronics that the pack has to run. The reason we decided not to go towards a rechargeable system is so each pack would come with one rechargeable battery. The problem is if that rechargeable battery has to come out of the pack, go into a charger. We couldn't figure out a good transition of how we'd almost have to buy an extra set of batteries.
So no battery plug in or nothing.
Right, yeah, there's no plug into them or anything. The battery pack's got to come out. It's got to go into a base station charger.
So I haven't checked, but just thinking about lifespan, if we look in your replacement schedule, so this is about a 10-year deal. So sometime in 2030, we'll be doing it again.
Yeah. And again, you know, like we discussed last time, that's a guideline. You know, in 10 years, these packs may be doing great, and we say, oh, like how we have some of these that are 20 years old. If we can keep going, we'll go as long as we can.
For sure. No, this is obviously critical life safety equipment that we don't want to skimp on, for sure. And I see you got it in 2030 again. Any more board comment on this? Any more public? I'm sorry.
Yes, I think I'm very impressed with the detailed testing of the two masks, the two types and two systems, and I know nothing about any of them, so I know you guys have excellent judgment about that. The one thing that somehow or another we've been talking about spending money is that there seems to be some kind of a law, I think, that says it's over $80,000 has to go out on bids. Now, I hear you say that there's only two really responsible units, people doing this, and we're obligated to take the lowest responsible bid, which could be whatever is most responsible for that. So I guess I'm wanting to make sure that just looking at these two things, that do we have to go out and do an actual formal bid request to go for this? Because if that $80,000 limit does apply to these kinds of funds being used out of capital reserve, then I think by law I think we have to do a formal bid. I'm asking more than anything else. I just wonder if we need to check that.
Yeah, I don't believe that there's any law that binds us to that, a procurement policy that you and I have discussed. We'll bring to the board in June. And so I'm not aware of any legal requirement that we go out and bid over any dollar amount. And in my tenure on the board, we've always done exactly this, get a series of quotes and go ahead and make these purchases. So I think if you conflate what the county has put into place or whatever, that may be where you're getting the $80,000 thing. But I'm not aware of any law that binds us to go out over any set dollar amount. Are you guys aware of anything?
I assume our Cascades are still fine to
yes.
work with MSA?
Yeah, we're not changing the PSI of the bottles, so it's identical, the connection's identical, so it won't, yeah, we tried to stay with as consistent as we could with our current equipment.
Chuck, if you're still on, are you familiar with what Nick might be referencing in terms of a legal requirement?
There is no law that requires you to go out for bids. And in addition, and this is kind of the more critical side of it, there is no law that requires you to go with the lowest bid. That used to be in the federal rules, and they kind of figured out that sometimes the lowest bidder wasn't actually the best equipment or the best provider. So that was rescinded on the federal side. But as far as for Highlight, neither of those things would be an issue.
Right.
You don't have to go to bids, and if you did go to bids, you by far would not have to take the lowest bid as long as you had a reason for taking the other bid. You'll remember that, Pete, maybe with doing the fire station.
Yeah. Okay, any more discussion? Any more public comment? Can I have a motion to approve Brian's preferred option?
I make a motion to approve Big Sky Fire Equipment purchasing MSA SCBAs.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you, Brian.
You bet.
Nick, get an update for us on the solar?
No, I do not per se. I guess as Cheryl, if the ad has appeared twice in a week apart, and I don't know if anybody's applied or sought material.
Not to date.
So Barley and oats or anybody?
No. The deadline is June 3rd, so I would anticipate June 3rd. We'll see whatever bids are going to come in.
So we could have a decision at the June meeting then. Okay.
Yeah,
just one note, if it's okay with fellow board members, I'm just going to delay the officer's election until Walt's here next month. I don't think anybody have any heartburn about that.
Because you feel guilty about railroading him without even being present?
Exactly.
Guilt is a wonderful thing.
Okay, moving on to the back page of the agenda, we've got website updates. Whoever got the parade stuff up there, that was awesome. Who wants to tackle the website update?
I'd love to have Mr. Michael Buffington come up and just give the board a little overview of what he's worked on to date.
Great.
To improve the website.
Yeah.
Michael, just for the public, if you'd introduce yourself and what capacity you're serving us, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, Michael Buffington, volunteer resident here, interested in helping out with this website. So our website is hosted by WordPress, which does a lot of convenient formatting features for us. It makes it very approachable to make any sort of changes or alterations in the content, as well as a lot of fun features and other doodads like that. So I took it upon myself to, one, fix a lot of broken links, navigation issues. Two, updated some outdated content, uploaded some photos of our apparatus, as well as worked with Riff to add some more content as well about our training and becoming a volunteer too. Took about 11 hours, but there's still more to do. There's tons of other things that it'd be great for other people to see. So if you guys have looked at it either today or in the past couple weeks and have any comment about changes made or changes you want to make, I'd love to hear them. But otherwise, they've been pretty minimal so far. Pretty unobtrusive, I would say, just cleaning everything up.
Chuck, is that your dog barking?
No, that's. I don't know where that's coming from, because that's definitely not on my end.
All right. Just making sure.
And just to let you guys know, I don't know if he's near a microphone, but being able to hear his comments were pretty limited on this end.
Okay. You can turn that microphone on, Michael?
Yeah. Better.
Just speak for
a second. Yeah, can you hear me a little bit clearer now?
How's that, Chuck?
Sounds better. Much better.
Okay, board discussion about the website. We've been around and around this, and I think as we observed and agreed that the first order of business is figure out what we want out of a website. And we have allocated some funds to be spent to make this better. But it's really incumbent upon us as a board to decide how it's functioning and what level of functionality we've got. So,
I was on it the other day. It looked great having a Facebook feed, and it looks clean and much better improvement. Looks great.
I know Nick put a lot of time putting comments into that. Thank you for that. I'm sure that was very helpful to the gang. Mr. Jarrett, any comments?
No comments.
Michael or Jason or Brian, do you guys have a vision of where this might go? Or what do you give us an update on how you guys are thinking about approaching this?
Well, I think Michael and I have just been working to, again, as he said, first of all, clean up all the inherent problems, the links that were broken, and get that cleaned up. One of my goals for the website is to enhance our recruitment. So, I wrote a bunch of dialogue for him to add in. We're going to get pictures, still working with the state school to get videos to put on there so we can really feature our training program for the department. And so that's,
getting the board profiles on there was a big deal. We're going to get pictures of staff and get them in a very similar format, so we're all either standing in the same place or wearing the same uniform, and it just looks a little tighter for those profiles, and just, you know, make it clean and usable. Michael's had some great ideas that the city of Bozeman had. You can maybe talk about that little piece.
Yeah, let me speak up. A popular feature on municipal organization websites to better help people find the information they want is to organize information, not really by department or type of action, but more as a category of search. You'll see it phrased out a lot called I Want To. If you go to Bozeman's website, Central Valley is a really good one. It just says, I want to apply. And you can apply for a permit. You can apply for becoming a volunteer. You can apply for, you know, all sorts of things. I want to learn. And then there's all sorts of things to learn about. So it's just a different way to organize information to allow the user to better find what they're after. And it's really just a municipal governments that use this. It's not really a commercial tool. You'll see on my Facebook or anything like that. But so what I would like to do is expand on that feature, and part of that is gathering information about what phone calls you're getting and what slows you down by having people reach out to you instead of go to our website, and we'll just implement that into a very convenient table for people to find that information on their own.
Yeah, my priorities are for the website to provide the public information about the operations of the district. And I was just scrolling around on this earlier today. I really like all the agendas are now up with the little video links and minutes. And we've been doing that for a while, I understand. But it's really clean looking. And the policies are up there. So from my perspective, that's really what I'm after. Is that it's a place where the public can go to get information about the workings of their district. So, any public comment about the website? So it seems to me that this is just a continuous improvement project that you guys are engaged in.
Yep.
And board members should feel free to monitor the website, or encouraged for sure to monitor the website, and if we need to have it as an agenda item, we can, but it seems to me like it's going in a good direction. Any other board comments?
Well, I would. I think there's tremendous improvement. I really like the feed from the, what do you call it?
Facebook. Facebook.
Facebook. I don't do Facebook. But one of the things that Jason and I have talked about is, what is it that is going to make this the go-to page for older people, which tends to be our taxpayers? And I don't know if you've addressed that problem directly. I think it's something that we really would like to do. I think we need to make this a website that, and it's a great website. I think we've made some tremendous improvements. I think we can make more. One of the things I suggest is that very clearly at the front of it is something that tells who you are and how people can reach you, Michael, to make some changes. And right now, this is completely a staff kind of a deal and not involving the public very much. And I still go back to the question, which I think Jason Gerber brought forth, is how is it that the demographics of the age of the people who are volunteers, young people going out doing lots of things, and there's fires and so on. But what is it, I guess what I'm saying is we don't want to ignore the old men and women that are sitting who might really like to get onto that website, and clearly easy to get to the places to see what's really going on. And I don't know how we balance that out, because this is a highlight Rural Fire District website. It's not just a volunteer staff website, and it's not just the taxpayer website, it's everything website. Mm-hmm. So anything we can do to make that work better and I like the idea of very easy on one page to get to various places, whether it's, my wife looked at it and she said, well, be neat to see where's the smoke, press a button and something comes up and maybe it tells where, because we talked about where the trucks are, there somewhere there was a fire over on Guccio Road not too long ago, and a bunch of smoke from our house we could see, we didn't know. But the point being is, I think that was one of the things that was, you know, don't go that way, or what it is, you know, what are we experiencing? So I don't know how that balance all comes about, and I think I'm just pleased that if we can all work that way to get to it. And I'd be very happy to work with people on it, but I don't know when you do this work, or when, if we need to get together, or again, if maybe the public would like to put their comments and have a place right on that front page that says, I have a comment about this, why don't you do this, or why did you do that? I guess that would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I think it'd be really easy to implement something to get feedback from the people actually using it. Moving to a different way to organize information in a I want to structure will really help with that too. It's a pretty big can of worms to open to look into having our website live be kind of where our trucks are and what emergencies we're on. I think we do a good job, and other departments do a good job about that. If it is major and could be blocking roads and traffic, is being it on Facebook. I know Brian's really good about that. Bozeman does that. There's a bunch of different departments who do that, and that's definitely the best way for us to use our own judgment to decide what the public needs to know about and what they don't, such as medical emergencies and the like. So I think that's a pretty good solution to that. Although if the public has anything other to say about that, I'd love to hear.
Okay.
What's the sustainment plan, Chief Rivisky?
Can you be more specific?
Michael's cool. Websites get a lot of attention historically, and then they drop off, and then Nick notices something, and then they jump back up, and then they drop back down. Do we have a plan to keep that moving and keep it on somebody's radar?
You know, we don't currently. I mean, one part of the plan for Michael is to make sure our website is easy to adjust for anybody else coming in who has even remotely a little bit of experience. Even if it's Brian and I, is that Michael helps us to understand how we can update things and change things. What we may want to do is part of the annual review is an annual look at the website to make sure it's still meeting the needs. Because, I mean, that's I don't know if I want to say unfortunate, but just part of the reality is the makeup of this board could change. Thus, the expectation of what this website is could change. Because boards really are just made up of the individuals that are on it. And we could easily have some young, Silicon Valley guy retire and come to this Highlight Fire District and have a lot of different ideas about our technology, or vice versa. So I think maybe just an annual review would be a good idea of the website to make sure that it's still meeting our needs. Or we just make a point of, like, training or anything else, just revisiting it every few months. And
well, I think what you're getting at, JJ, it used to be Kevin Oliver, right, for all those years doing this. And I do think this is something that is important, but perhaps not urgent. So let's just keep reviewing it. And I think as board members, we should keep reviewing it. Nick, you asking those questions that you're asking, how it's easy to work for people who may not be dealing with technology every day, is a good one. And let's just monitor it as we go.
One more thing to note about that. I did update it, so the homepage right now just has all of the links to those news articles and whatnot. And I changed the format where we can update that main page as often as we want. So, if there were to be a continuous update, the chief or someone wants to write a monthly update, a quarterly update to replace that information, I think that would be something that into that category. But it's very, very easy to do that. It's, you just type an essay and click out. So, yeah.
May I ask one more question?
Of course.
When I looked at it recently again, and I talked about this before, I'm really pleased to see the feed from Facebook thing, and you know, you could scroll through and see some things. But I guess I don't understand why it seemed like every drop-down menu, I get that same, there was a lady or somebody at the first picture on that scroll-down thing from Facebook, and every page, that seemed like everywhere throughout the whole thing. Instead of on the front page, where there's one place we can go to with current events, it seems like every time I go down through, then that feed shows up again. I'm not sure if it adds to it or whatever. I just noticed it was there an awful lot and there's no new information. So I wondered if we could use that other, that space for other information that's different, or we can eliminate a lot of fiddling around and just have it one place where people can go to see that. I don't know. I just asked the question.
Yeah, we can definitely just have it displayed in one spot. No problem.
Okay, unless there's more discussion, we're going to move on. Fire Chief's report, Chief Revisky.
Okay, I'm going to keep kind of the official report fairly brief, other than to say we do have our spring recruit training going. We had to delay it because of all the COVID stuff and just being prudent about it, but we started it up. 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
2 weeks ago, with the emphasis on trying to have the distancing to meet state standards and the county recommendations, and it's going well.
Just one question on that. Was there a carve-out for emergency services from any of the COVID regs that came down from the state? Like, were you guys exempt from...
We were exempt.
You were exempt.
Well, we were essential.
Yeah, as essential services, we have to have 3 firefighters and an engine within 6 feet of each other,
right? Okay.
To provide that service, so yes.
And you had no problems with COVID kind of stuff? The department had no issues with
it? No, it was all a planning operation, right? I mean, it was important, like JJ and I have discussed, putting these plans together for the next event is really critical. And we did a lot of that on a county level. Brian and I both participated on the county emergency management team. And we did a lot of planning, a lot of working with the county health department, sheriff's office, medical emergency direction. Management. What's that?
Medical director.
Yeah, the hospital and our medical direction. You know, we were writing protocols for how would the personal protective gear, how we were going. I mean, we changed the whole way we went on calls. When we went on a medical call, we took what we called the scout concept, which kind of came out of Washington State, which is you just send one in instead of everybody running in. And the one person does a quick assessment. And if there isn't a need for everybody else, that's the one person doing medical care.
Right.
And limiting the exposure. And we had to change cardiac arrest protocols, and there's a lot of work that went into it. Its direct effect on us, I think in Gallatin County, I don't think a single COVID patient was transported by ambulance to Bozeman Deaconess Hospital. Not a single transport took place. During the COVID time, I'll put that at about a 2.5 month little operational period. Is that fair, JJ? The ambulance transports in Gallatin County went down 50%. Hospital admissions went down, I don't know what the percentage.
A lot.
So we were impacted from a planning and operations and management standpoint, but from an actual COVID standpoint of the disease process affecting us directly, almost, I mean, our calls were slow. We were slow. It just changed the way we did. We had to stop doing station nights at Cottonwood because it was just too much cohabitation. We had to tell people who didn't live at this station to stay out of the living quarters, you know. We limited people in trucks. You know, we only sent two on medical calls and one piece of apparatus. We had to make a lot of changes just to adapt to what it was, what the crisis was anticipated to be. We got lucky, and it didn't turn out to be much of a deal in Gallatin County. But we were ready if it was a deal. So that was kind of a cool process. So, but we do have a recruit class going full speed, and actually Chris has made a few modifications to do catch up. They're going to do, instead of just doing every Saturday and Wednesday nights, they're going to do 6 Sundays. All the recruits agreed to do that, to just get caught up. So it was pretty good. And it's a really nice group of folks in that class too. I will say quickly on the signage update that I did make contact with Signs of Montana, but once the COVID thing hit, they were shut down. And so I have reconnected with them since, and they're getting the backlog caught up, but they're going to get back with that project for us. But yeah, that definitely hit the brakes hard. So the big topic I want to discuss is, I talked to you guys about the ambulance transport thing, and I said I would come back with a plan, and I have. Just so you know, I tried to keep this brief so you guys weren't reading a novel about what... thank you, that's good. What the thought was behind this. So in this packet, what I've included for you is just a quick overview of how we got to where we got today. And I can certainly go over that with you guys here briefly if you'd like, but AMR has been the private third-party ambulance company that's provided services in the Valley here for over 20 years. They are not beholden in contractually with anybody except the city of Bozeman. And slowly over time, they've had a harder and harder time staffing their services. One of the key recent elements that has occurred is that historically, Bozeman Fire has an ambulance, Medic 1, that they contract with AMR, that if AMR is not available, Bozeman uses their medic unit to respond to 911 calls in the county. And then AMR pays them, basically, the cost of the overtime callback for their firefighters. Well, AMR got a little tired of paying all that money, so AMR told Bozeman Fire, we're not going to reimburse you anymore if you leave the city of Bozeman. We'll only reimburse you for Medic 1 going out in the city of Bozeman. And Bozeman Fire responded by saying, we're not going to leave the city of Bozeman with our ambulance anymore. So there you go. Even on top of that, leading up to those events of that last fire council meeting, we have gotten called more and more often to transport patients with our ambulance. It was kind of ironic that the month leading up to that fire council meeting, we had to transport 3 different patients out of the city of Bozeman because there were no ambulances available. And Medic 1 was not available either. So just reading the tea leaves, I believe that it's in the best interest of our public that we become more involved in ambulance transport to ensure that that service exists for our patients. What I'm proposing to the board is a no change in staffing model assumption of a certain portion of our ambulance transports in the district. Through our dispatch center, all of our medical calls are prioritized using a standardized CAD-based system. It rates calls between an alpha and an echo. Alpha is the simplest, least threatening call. Somebody trips and falls, that becomes an alpha. Cardiac arrest would be echo, the most serious call. So what I would suggest we start doing is that we would take AMR off of our run cards, meaning who's dispatched, on Alpha through Charlie calls, and leave them on our run cards for Delta and Echo to have that backup of having that third-party and paramedic level system. I'm certainly proposing that we run a basic life support system, not an advanced life support system. If we ran an advanced life support ambulance system, that would surely mean the hiring of more staff, and I think it's unnecessary. I think we can run a very capable ambulance transport service with basic life support. We still have the ability on any call to ask for AMR to respond to that call, or ask our mutual aid partners who run ambulance services like Central Valley and Bozeman Fire. I'm hoping at some point we can resolve this issue with Bozeman and them not wanting to send their ambulance out through a mutual aid agreement directly addressing that, but I'm being optimistic. So I kind of laid out here kind of the plan in its simplest terms. What I've included in your packet is a proposal from Pentler Billing Services. They come highly, highly recommended from Central Valley Fire, who started doing their own ambulance transport 3 years ago, four years ago. They've had excellent, not only customer service, but billing figures from this company. She sent a full proposal. They will literally help us set up the entire program, not only the electronic PCRs or patient care reports and lots of options for those, but help us with billing rates and everything else we might need. So our folks would do an ambulance transport, they would do an electronic patient report, and then hit send. It goes to the billing company, and we're done. They take 8% off what the billing fees collected are.
Tell me how you're thinking about it from a revenue cost perspective. Is the goal to cover costs, to make money? How are you thinking about all that in the billing system world?
Well, it's difficult, as always, to anticipate. The lens I'm looking at this through is that even if we continued the current model that we have this QRU that we use ad nauseum to respond to calls. It's been a great purchase for us. We bought it very inexpensively from Big Sky Fire. However, we bought a vehicle they were retiring. And it's pretty long in the tooth. No matter what we did, we would replace that with another ambulance. Mm-hmm. So we're buying a piece of capital that we would probably buy anyways. We have the opportunity, very little risk to the district, to dip our toes in the water of ambulance transport. If it doesn't work, if for some reason it's a failed model, we can always put AMR right back on our run cards. That always exists. Now, I feel very confident it won't fail, but the goal of this is not to make money. We would engage in fair ambulance billing practices in order to recoup additional costs, because there will be costs associated. Right. I mean, there's the purchase of the
capital
equipment.
Replacement and maintenance, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's all of that, but it is not unheard of in the fire service for a fire department to decide to go into ambulance transport in order to help fund something else. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly not what we're trying to do. Now, if in the end this ends up being somewhat profitable for us, that's another form of contribution to our capital replacement schedule. So our staff is excited about it. I mean, would you agree with that? That in general, we're going on every medical call. There's not a medical call we don't go on. The only difference is we'll be putting the patient in our ambulance and driving them to the hospital ourselves, which gives our firefighters the ability to become better EMTs and practice those skills better and to spend more time with our taxpayers and customers instead of handing them off to a third-party company every time. We actually get to spend more time and have more of an impact on our customers.
I'll just make one comment, and then we'll have more discussion and public comment. What I really like about this is the enhancement of training opportunities for volunteers to get everybody up to that EMT level. I mean, I think that's a complete win in terms of recruitment, retention, and also for our residents to have people trained to that higher level.
Yeah, and I'm very cautious not to oversell this. Yeah. What I anticipate is this will improve recruitment for us, that people can come here and not only do fire, get experience doing ambulance transport, not just running on medical calls.
Right. Board discussion.
Oh, and another thing, just let me say the last page, I just wanted to give you guys, this is a cost estimate on the type of ambulance that we would look at. I did not go out for bids. This is definitely something that I would recommend us going out for a competitive RFP process for something like an ambulance, because there are a lot of manufacturers out there. It's different than the S. There are a lot of manufacturers that we should be looking at.
Yeah.
But this is a fully loaded model. I don't like to throw small numbers out at you guys. This is Cadillac of the type of ambulance that we'd be looking at that number.
Just to be clear, we're not making a decision on this tonight. It'll be in the June agenda. So this is just discussion. Okay, board members.
Chief, what's the percentage of calls that are Alpha Bravo compared to the Echoes?
You know, it's a moving number, but I would say that 85% of our calls are Alpha through Charlie.
Non-emergent.
Yeah. Not that, but yeah.
Well, BLS calls.
Yes.
Have you looked at, do you have some raw numbers for us to start looking at in terms of projections? What we would recoup, how many calls would be going on, what we'd be getting back in billing, what it'd be costing us for staffing and equipment and capital?
Yeah, I can certainly get from Pentler their estimate of what they would expect, but I hate to make promises. I can make staffing cost estimates for you, which is nothing. There's no cost in that. This is a volunteer staffed program.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I would suggest in this model is, I guess I'm thinking in net terms. So I think it would be a great benefit to our volunteers if we created a system in which when two people respond on that ambulance and we do a transport, we were to pay the volunteers, say, just hypothetically, $100 stipend each that would be taken out of that billing amount that we would get. So yes, I'm sorry, JJ, there would be some cost from a net standpoint, though. It would still be, yeah.
That percentage of calls taking it from AMR, and I'll say it right off the front, I don't care if AMR survives or not, but does that, removing that number of calls out of the system, make it more likely that they're not available for the ALS calls or for the backup calls?
I don't know the answer to that.
There's a downstream consequence.
I understand, and I don't know. And when I had about an hour-long conversation with Dr. Beer, who's our medical control physician out of the hospital, about this, and we talked about the same topic, which was just, are we putting another nail in the coffin of AMR? And it's maybe. I don't know. I don't have a strong answer to that. My only response to that question is that AMR has firmly placed themselves in this position. Their operational decisions that they've made in the last few years, which is to concentrate a lot of their efforts on interfacility transports and then not being available for 911 calls, changing the terms of their contract with Bozeman Fire to no longer reimburse them for covering them when they're not available. There are lots of things that AMR has done that weren't self-advocating, you know, to be kind. And I don't think we should allow our taxpayers and customers to suffer making sure that AMR survives. And just so the board also is aware, it's been a very rocky start, but about 6 months ago, I started a committee in the county looking at a contingency plan for if AMR was to leave and how we could put a county system together. It's a very difficult task in this county to get all the jurisdictions and players to agree. There were a number of jurisdictions that felt threatened by this concept, that we were trying to take their authority to do transport themselves away. Even though we tried to explain this as a coalition of the willing, we're just trying to get the Fort Ellis's, the Highlights, the Gateways, the people that if AMR left tomorrow, which they could, they have no contractual obligation to us at all, we would be left with nothing. I'd rather be prepared for their departure.
Other board members?
Yes, I do have some questions. First of all, this is a huge subject. I don't fully understand. I think it takes a lot of more study to understand. And I think it's also in my mind, anyway, and I may be completely wrong, but I think it's something, a highly important public issue that I think our public, that we have to reach out to in some way that they fully understand the implications. What I'm seeing here is we're going to be asked, using their tax dollars, to make a significant change, maybe for the best for them, I don't know. Others have, like I guess Central Valley has their own ambulance transport, maybe some others do. But do we really understand? I don't understand, and maybe the public needs to understand before we make a decision about this, what it really means to them. I think, given that we are wanting to buy more things and we're going to have a new station at some point and on and on and on and all this taxes, that the public really needs to be behind us to decide, is this the level of services needed? I think one of the questions comes up, we're talking about and was raised here, yes, AMR, I guess, is a for-profit company which can come or leave, but here we are as a government agency, maybe going to affect them in a way, and they may leave, and they may be self-destructing because of their policy, or maybe they may have changed their mind. So I guess what I'm saying is that I think we need to devote a significant amount of time, maybe a particular one agenda meeting for the public to really hear from you, your very eloquent talk about this, to teach people what this means, to really understand all the things. You pass things around in jargon, I don't fully understand them, A, B, C, D, and E, and so on. I think back to the days of the Ray Fire Company tore down a building because they suddenly were going to give emergency services. They had to have a blood room. So they made a new building and tore it down. They didn't even talk to the taxpayers about it. I worry about that in terms of the public view. It may be the best thing in the world for the public to have this exact system that they're talking about. It's their tax dollars, though, and they ought to be able to weigh in on that very significantly. And I would urge the board to do whatever it takes, to take whatever time it takes, to really inform the public and to put this issue out. I really would like to see, you know, you say it's very difficult to get coalitions, but it's a complex problem, and I see no real, you know, I can't say that it's going to be this much every time, because there's training in here, we don't know how much that takes. There's going to be something else changing. There's a truck that's going to cost more. We've got another ambulance to refit. I guess I would urge that we take time and really work to get this before the public in a way that they can weigh in on it. And I certainly don't know how to vote on it. Without that information, I don't know how I would vote for it. And so I guess that's my thoughts at this moment.
More board discussion.
We talked before about insurance, and insurance was fine with it as long as it wasn't all the time. Is there anything huge difference with...
Yeah, that was not an insurance. That was state licensing.
Okay.
Yeah. So the state separates licenses into transport and non-transport. You know, historically, we've had a non-transport license. You can, or one can still transport somebody in an ambulance without a transport license as long as it's not done on a routine basis. And that's literally the wording in the regulations of the state, is routine basis. So we would just have to get a transport license, okay, which is paperwork.
What about the insurance part?
So I'm still waiting to hear back from Sean Peterson. He couldn't answer the question because it's really a BFIS question. So he was trying to get that information that if this, because what I want you guys to fully understand is any costs that are associated with this. So insurance may be a cost. He wasn't sure at all. He said, I really don't know if that's going to change your policy. You already have an ambulance. I don't know if they just already consider that to be what it is. So he is trying to get an answer from BFIS on that.
And any other liabilities, like someone suing us for...
I mean, no more than... I want to be careful when I say that. We have liabilities in everything we do. I mean, when we go to a car accident and we're setting up traffic, I mean, it's full of liabilities.
I just didn't know if there was other policies we had to have.
No.
Okay.
I don't, not that I know of right now, Justin, but absolutely, before you guys would ever be asked to make a decision, all of those questions would be answered through Sean Peterson.
Let's get some public comment and then we'll come back for more for discussion if we'd like. Is there any public comment on this?
Michael Buffington, volunteer.
If you could just turn that on, Michael.
Yeah, thank you. Michael Buffington, volunteer. Just a quick comment. I think some of the greatest assets we have, you know, in our EMTs on this department are the ones who do work for AMR, because they get much higher volume of calls, and also because they're the ones doing the transportation, so they get that experience as well. And so adding our own transportation services, that's something we provide, would definitely improve the quality of EMTs we have across the board. So I think it'd be a really good idea in our taxpayers' best interests.
Chuck, any comments?
Yeah, well, this came up a while back in regards to after a trustee meeting, the statewide meeting. There's a number of Westside volunteer fire departments that have the transport and have been billed through insurance or so forth. So I think some of the points Jason brought up are incredibly important, and this is the function, or at least certainly as a taxpayer, I see a function of what Highlight Fire Department does, which is respond to emergency calls. And if you don't have backup from the city anymore, if they're not going to leave the city, and quite often AMR's ambulance is unavailable, in effect, you're leaving the residents of Highlight without possibly an ambulance service, at least on the transport side. And so having one, a vehicle that is in good shape and able to transport and be able to provide life support system and so forth, is incredibly important. And having the volunteers further trained, which I see this as a great opportunity, I think this could be a revenue plus scenario. But I think the public certainly has a wonderful opportunity to comment on this by either calling in or attending the meetings. The website, Facebook, and so forth means that no one from the public can't know what's going on. Whether they choose to chime in or not is up to them, and I don't see that as our mission. I see it as our mission to make sure they're aware via the sources and the media that we're using now. But I think it sounds like a very important thing to continue to pursue, and I think it also is probably becoming very timely that it's likely Highlight's going to have to enact that and get into the transport business.
Okay, thank you. More board discussion. Is there I'll get to you in one sec. Just one question. Is there any time sensitivity? What?
Let me say that no urgent time sensitivity. We absolutely have time to study this topic. Mm-hmm. To Nick's point, I think the board absolutely, I mean, this is just,
I'm phasing you guys into this and bringing, not trying not to overload you and bringing you pieces at a time. And, but there's more for us to study with this, but at the same time, I don't want to drag on for a year or more.
Sure.
You know, I would like to see the board be able to make a decision on this in the next 2 to 3 months.
I thought it was like an end of summer.
Yeah.
Jason?
I want to make the comment that the writing is on the wall and has been for a long time on this.
Yes.
And the question is, how do we do it the most cleverly and with the least amount of downstream damage and without ending up being the ambulance service for the whole south side of the valley, unless we want to. So it needs to happen. It's probably going to happen. The question is whether or not we wait and get forced into it in an emergency, or how we wrangle our way into this in a nice, clean, smooth way.
If it's okay with other board members, Cheryl, for the June meeting, let's just have it as a discussion item. And can you send these electronically around to everybody?
Absolutely.
So Walt has them so we can sit and think about it. And I think your time frame is totally reasonable.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to continue to gather data, and I will get more numbers on Alpha Charlie, Delta Echo, and I know that these are new concepts of this whole system, and maybe I'll write out a little bit of a chart on what all that stuff means.
And I think it's important that each board member feels like they can call Brian or Jason, go have a cup of coffee, and walk through this as slowly and as much detail as they want. That's anytime we're considering something big like this, that's totally appropriate in my view to do. So please feel free to do that. Any further public comment? Any further board discussion on the chief's report? Okay, trustee activities. Anything going on you want us to know about, trustee activities? Any announcements?
What's the date for our summer barbecue?
June 24th.
There you go. June 24th, Cottonwood Summer Barbecue.
Thanks for calling in, Chuck. We're going to adjourn the regular meeting and go to executive session. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.